In association with iFanboy, welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. It's time for part two of our conversation with Francis Manipal. Now, in the first part, we talked a lot about Francis's comic book work, but Francis is moonlighting. He has a great job in television as one of the experts on a new reality show called Beast Legends. Now, it's already premiered in Canada, but the American premiere is coming up in just a couple weeks, September 9th, on the Sci-Fi Channel, right after their show Destination Truth on Thursdays. So you won't want to miss it, but Francis gives us an excellent preview of the show, and it sounds like they're really taking advantage of Francis's skill as an artist, and he's getting a once-in-a-lifetime chance to travel the world, and he gets a chance to experience things a lot of us would never dream of doing. Great stories coming up from Francis Manipal on this edition of Word Balloon. Now, before we get started with the program, I just wanted one Word Balloon Network note, and that is the All Yeah podcast with Art and Franco is up and running, and they've got their own website to get the show. Now, it hasn't posted yet on iTunes. If you have a Mac, you can certainly subscribe to the feed via your iTunes software. But until it's posted in the directory, I want to direct you to the blog site where you can download the episodes. It's awyeah, A-W-Y-E-A-H, dot Libsyn, L-I-B-S-Y-N, dot com. Awyeah, dot Libsyn, dot com. You'll find the Aya podcast up there. Episodes 1 and 2 are posted. Now, as I said in the preview, if you heard our last episode of Word Balloon, episode 1 is a little staticky, but episode 2 is very clean. If you enjoy the presentation that you get from Art Baltazar and Franco at conventions, I don't think you're going to be disappointed because it's just as fun. They've got tons of convention stories, plus talk about the books that they're working on, Tiny Titans, the wrap-up of Billy Batson and the Magic of Shazam, and very soon, Young Justice. That's right. So if you want all the details and all the fun, make sure you check out the Aw Yeah podcast with Art and Franco. I've got episodes posted at wordballoon.com, but do yourself a favor, go directly to their website, Aw Yeah, A-W-Y-E-A-H, dot Libsyn, L-I-B-S-Y-N, dot com. The Aw Yeah podcast with Art and Franco, up and running on the Word Balloon Network. For now, let's enjoy Francis Manipal, part two, on this edition of Word Balloon.
All right, let's talk about what's keeping you occupied when you're not drawing, because this is a crazy second job you've discovered, and I want to know how you're able to balance working on television and also being able to crank out pages for comics. But let's talk about Beastmasters. How did you get this job?
It's actually Beast Legends.
Excuse me? All right, thank you. Then let me fix it then, because shame on me. Beast Legends.
That's okay. This is the whole reason why I'm finally on the show.
But tell me about Beast
Legends. I wasn't going to do it with my art.
Now, what's the Canadian channel that it's called?
It's airing on History Television in Canada, and it will start airing on Sci-Fi there in the U.S. on September 9th.
Excellent.
At 10 p.m.
And you're about four or five episodes airing in Canada right now?
Yeah, I mean, they had a rerun last week, but it's going to be a total of 6 one-hour episodes, and it's back to a new episode this coming Wednesday. So every Wednesday is 10 p.m. on History Television in Canada.
Cool.
They start airing, and it's well, what can I say? It definitely wasn't in my checklist of jobs that I wanted to have, you know. But it was such a surprise, and it's so strange because, you know, I'm a big fan of those travel shows, you know, like Pilot Guides, where these guys just go around the world, and I'm like, man, that is such a great job. You know, I'm like,
yeah.
That's not a job I can ever think of ever having, because, you know, I like traveling, but like watching those shows, I'm like, wow, I could watch people travel and not have to leave my couch. And so it was very weird and surreal when this job opportunity came up, and how it all came about was strange as well, because, you know, I just got this email out of the blue from one of the producers, and, you know, I get a few emails here and there about jobs and gigs, and, you know, most of the time it's, yeah, you know, we can't pay you, but we'll share some profits with you. You know, and so, you know, you learn not to take a lot of that stuff seriously.
Sure.
But when these guys shot me an email, the only reason why I remembered them was the production company is called Yap Films, and they have an office in downtown Toronto which I walk by every day.
Interesting.
You know, when I'm going to the bank or going to the art store or just hanging out, their office is right there. So I'm like, oh, wow, okay, these guys are a legit company, not some guy in his mom's basement or something. So I'm like, all right, you know, I'll come in for an interview. I figured it's probably a design job, storyboarding or whatever, which, you know, I've dabbled a little bit in storyboarding, but I've never done any designs or anything like that. So I'm like, this sounds like a good learning experience that someone will pay for. Perfect, you know? So I came in for an interview, and as it turns out, as the interview was progressing, they were like, this is actually for an on-camera role. I'm like, oh, okay. So they're like, do you mind if we film this interview? I'm like, go for it, right? So then they filmed the interview, and then after the interview, I guess it went pretty well, you know, and we did like a screen test, and I guess that went well. So I came in for, which was really weird, because the first interview, you know, I gave them a copy of my book, whatever, and they weren't even aware of what my art looked like, you know? So they just, I was curious. I'm like, how did you guys find me?
Sure.
And, you know, this is going to sound egotistical, but it's one of my favorite stories of how they found me. they were just flipping through the a convention booklet, and they were just looking at people's bios and pictures of artists. And they're like, you know, you look young. Sure, why not, right? So I'm like, oh, perfect. So I've never gotten a job based on...
That's like, hey, kid, want to join the circus? I mean, that's pretty much what it sounds like. You know?
It was so weird. It's like, hey, kid, you look like a freak. I don't know if you have any abilities.
You don't look like a freak. You look like a nice kid, that's all. But that's what it's like. Come on, Billy. We're going
exactly
around the world.
But that's what makes the story so good. It was the opposite. Hey, you good-looking kid, come over here.
There you go. Attaboy.
So I came in, and it wasn't until the second interview where they had me do a screen test of drawing in front of the camera.
Okay.
And what was really neat, I realized, was that, holy crap, you know, the things that we've been learning of how to draw fast at conventions is finally paying off. Because and at the time, that was when I started dabbling with watercolors and painting. So
very cool.
I brought my brushes, and to them, the strokes were really bold. It was really big, so the images were unfolding for their eyes a lot quicker than what they expected it to be, you know, which is someone comes in with typical pencils and stuff like that.
Sure.
So they really enjoyed that aspect of it, which is that they didn't have to speed up the video if they had to, you know.
Right.
They could have just left it unedited if they wanted to, or they could speed it up. So they really liked that dynamic, so, you know, I don't hear from them for a couple of weeks, and I thought I didn't get the thing, and they just give me a call and say, hey, come on board, you know. And what was really interesting was that my initial involvement in the show was supposed to be very minimal. You know, it was, I remember talking to the money guy, you know, the producer and director's like, oh, yeah, we're going to send you here, we're going to bring you there, you're going to do this. I'm like, wow, that sounds great, you know. Then I talked to the guy who handles the money. He's like, we're going to use you very sparingly. he's like, in fact, I think we could get all your scenes done in 6 days. Six episodes, we could probably do two episodes a day, in fact.
So wow.
Six tops, right? Because what was supposed to, the structure of the show was these scientists are supposed to go out on adventures and bring back the information they've gathered on how to create these monsters that we're building, and I'm supposed to draw it on camera at the, you know, Beast Lab, right?
Okay.
Because there's like a home base. There's like a home base, right, where, you know, there's computers and taxidermy stuff and, you know, all sorts of stuff, right? So I was supposed to be in the studio, and I was never supposed to go anywhere. And just by luck, one of the first episodes was, or what I guess ultimately became the first episode, because everything was completely shot out of sequence. They were going to Vietnam to do a Vietnamese wild man, which is their version of Bigfoot.
Okay.
And there's a lot of, you know, eyewitnesses, right?
Okay.
So they're like, well, we got this guy that can draw. why don't we just send him there with the other hosts and see how it goes. So I went over there for about 2 weeks.
Wow.
And it was absolutely insane, dude. It was such a culture shock. And
are these villages? These got to be like villages that are, I would assume, near, you know, the Vietnamese outback, for a lack of a better word, because I'm no geography whiz, so I don't know what they call their jungles other than that, right?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, absolutely. Here's the funny thing: some of the places we went to barely had running water, but the Wi-Fi was good.
Oh, interesting. You got to shit in the ground, but otherwise everything's fine. You got a good connection.
Ah, dude, but in New Zealand, we stayed in some of the nicest places, but the internet was horrible.
Interesting.
So
crazy.
So, you know, so we go to Vietnam, and you know, at this point in time, I didn't know what the identity of the show was. You know?
Okay.
I didn't know. I just knew that we do these things and we draw, right?
Right.
But as it turned out, they filmed everything, you know. Basically, you know, we'd meet downstairs, and then they filmed everything from the traveling to the missteps to getting lost. You know, I mean, you know, what ultimately made the show is obviously quite different from the experience that I had, because you know, editing 2 weeks worth of footage where you're shooting more than 15 hours a day into 44 minutes—that's a lot of stuff that's going
to
get cut. So the show was a lot more adventurous than I thought it would be, you know, because they wanted to use what's really great about the show is that the hosts on it, the what we're supposed to be experts on, that's actually a real job, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the guy I was with, he's an animal expert, so he's a real-life veterinarian, adventurer, did like about 15 years of experience in terms of doing those wildlife-type shows for BBC. So that was, he definitely fit the mold, and I guess I fit the mold of guy that draws, you know. And they found an interesting dynamic in that I've never camped before.
Okay.
I can't swim, and I'm afraid of heights. So it was
perfect
for them. Yeah, for them it was the perfect fish out of water. And what ended up happening was the dynamics between me and Steve Leonard, who is the other host.
Okay.
They really liked it. It had this, I guess, comedic sort of nature because we're so the polar opposite. He's outdoorsman. He literally has done everything maybe twice, whereas I'm completely out of my elements. And here I am. They dropped me into the jungle. And I remember doing an interview where they were like, what do you think you should bring in the jungle? I'm like, I don't know, hand sanitizer? Yeah. Because I don't know, right? You know, I really don't know.
This is really exciting to hear because, you know, we haven't seen it yet in the States. So
yeah, I mean,
and I got to be honest. I got to be honest, man. I hate reality shows for the most part, but the ones that do interest me are the ones where you actually learn something. And clearly, this is one of those types of shows. And even better that they are exploiting your strengths as an artist, because it sounds like you're almost like a crime scene, you know, guy that's doing, you know, the kind of what did the suspect look like, and you're there kind of drawing these images as this stuff is going on, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because that's actually exactly how they described it at first, which is that it's similar to being a crime scene illustrator or
sure.
Something, you know. So I was like, oh well, that's interesting, you know. So you know, going back to the story, so
yes.
We're in Vietnam, and we're doing all these crazy things, and you know, because it's real, and they want us to be us. So, because the office is really close by, I used to just skateboard down there.
Okay.
They're like, why don't you bring it to Vietnam with you? I'm like,
you're skateboarding in Vietnam.
I'm gonna do this in the jungle, but all right, I'll bring it with me, right? So then I bring it with me, and you know, because you know, it's real. But there's certain points and things that we have to do. And the story really unravels because of our personality and the path that we decide to choose.
Sure.
Right?
Of course.
So there was this one scene where we were stuck in traffic in Vietnam, if you've ever been, the traffic is insane, absolutely insane. Imagine the people traffic in San Diego, but on the streets, but on motorcycles.
Oh, God.
Right? So, you know, we were stuck, and we had to meet this scientist. And, you know, the producer's like, you know, we're paying a lot of money. We can't be late. We got to get there on time. And our car wasn't moving. So I happened to have my skateboard. And, you know, me and the other host kind of developed a friendly, I guess, rivalry, you know, in terms of one-upsmanship, right?
Okay.
You know, which I guess they really liked, you know, because, you know, going back to, because they had actually previously shot a sequence before where it was him and another scientist, and the networks didn't enjoy it as much because it felt too much of a Discovery Channel type show. So that was one of the other reasons why they sent me over to Vietnam, to sort of infuse the fiction part of the science, right? So, you know, we're stuck in traffic, and it's not moving, and Steve, he's a tall guy. He's like 6 foot something. You know, I'm like 5'4", right?
Yep.
So his legs are long and gangly, and could probably, one step is probably like one running stride for me, right? So he said, you know what, I think I could probably run through this traffic faster than you. And I said, well, so then we had a race. We had a race through the downtown busy streets of, I think, Hanoi.
Okay.
And so I busted my skateboard out, skating through the streets. I was grabbing onto bikes, doing, like, you know, the Back to the Future thing.
Sure.
So it was awesome, because I was like, oh, man, this is such a great action sequence. And one of the funniest part was, this is how you know it's real, because I was like, can I get a helmet? Because it looks pretty dangerous out there. You know, because normally I don't, but the traffic there, you know, you would want a helmet.
Understood.
And then the director's answer to me was, sure, you could go get it, but it's going to take a bit of time. Do you want to win the race? Oh, my God damn it. Right? So basically, when they said go, we went. So if I wanted to go grab a helmet during that time, I'm free to go ahead and do it, but I didn't want to lose the race. So off we went, you know, and then, so it was really cool. It was one of my favorite, sequences in the show. And I think it turned out really great. And, they even did this, the way they sequenced it on the show, it's almost like comic book paneling. They started doing like the you know, they had him on one side and they had me on one side, you know, and then it was really neat. 'Cause I was like, oh, that's really cool that they used that aspect of it.
That's awesome. When you're drawing these things, these creatures that you guys are exploring and eventually creating, are they animating your art? Is that part of the process? Obviously, all the Canadians right now are going, idiot, haven't you watched the show? And it's like, no, I haven't, man. It hasn't been on American TV yet. So
I know. It's funny because, you know, I have to thank the show, because I've had the most interesting tweets ever. it was really funny. Every time I ran into somebody that I knew at the con, they're like, dude, what the hell are you doing? Oh, yeah, that's a show. But
that's great, though.
To the animation, what they would do, and to me, this is one of my favorite parts, and, you know, to the credit of the animation studio, I can't take credit for any of that stuff. Everything that I do and draw is purely on camera. I have nothing to do with the behind-the-scenes stuff.
Okay.
So, well, but the structure of the show is at the beginning they have this fantastic 2D animation sequence of the legend. And what's great is every episode they use a different style. So artistically it's so cool to look at. And then the meat of the show is us basically trying to find scientific and biological evidence in the world to try to make this thing real. So we're not actually out there looking for this creature and whether it existed or not. It's more about looking for what exists and how we could apply it to our monster, right? So, you know, we would, like, for instance, when we were working on the Kraken, we went to New Zealand and we looked at real colossal squids and,
wow.
And, what do they call them? Octopuses.
Sure.
So, you know, we looked at those parts and their biology, and we used that part of their anatomy to build our creature, right? So, you know, we would do experiments like for instance, a kraken in the story it supposedly could eat a whale, right? So this thing has to be at least 200 feet long. So if you look at colossal squids, if you look at their tentacles, they actually have all these weapons on them, aside from the suckers. The suckers, by the way, on a colossal squid is all serrated, right? So it's all spiky and sharp.
Certainly.
On top of that, near the end of the feeding arms, it actually has these spikes coming out of it. And what's really interesting is that it's attached to a muscle, but that particular muscle is somewhat loose, but then attached to an inner cartilage in the tentacle that allows that spike to actually spin a full 360 degrees before it has to spin back, right? So basically, if this thing latches onto anything, if you're moving, you can't snap it off because the muscle membrane is able to twist and turn as its prey is moving around, right? So we decided to create, okay, if a kraken is 200 feet long, how big would this spike be? And the spike ended up being, I don't know, a good, like, 3 feet long or something, right?
Jesus.
So we went to this welding shop in New Zealand that created a lot of the weapons for Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
And Avatar. And so I was like, oh, man, this is so neat. You know, I'm, like, nerding out. So we make these weapons, more or less, for these metal versions of this thing. And then we go to the beach and thrash around with it, like as if we were the Kraken, smashing stuff up.
Outstanding.
Yeah. And along the way, obviously, when we were at the welding shop, you know, we designed what it looked like. So I drew on paper and stuff like that. And throughout the show, as we're learning new things about the animal, they would normally have a sequence where I would draw the creature, right? So ultimately, the stuff that we uncover and draw along the way during the documentary part of the show is ultimately what they use in the Beast Lab and animators to take and make a 3D version of it, right? So then at the end of the show, they have a 3D animated sequence of the beast that we created but inserted into the real world, into our modern world, right? So, you know, we have, like, these great sequences of this thing that we created, but in our current time, right?
So hilarious.
Really, really neat to see. It's almost like if you've ever seen Deadliest Warrior, you know, like, all the
right.
At the beginning, and then you see them fight at the end.
Yeah.
So it's all fantasy. That's basically what it is.
That's fantastic, and, man.
Yeah, it's really cool because, you know, on top of having all these adventures, I get to do what I do in real life on the show, which is draw.
Absolutely.
And what was great about it is that I think it also helped show that being a comic book artist actually makes you quite a versatile artist. So the first episode, they just had me draw on paper. And then in the second episode, we were looking for a location for me to draw a kraken in New Zealand. And I was like, you know, the most impressive part of this thing is that it's huge. I said, if you can just find me a sand somewhere on a beach, I'll just draw it on the sand to scale. That
wow.
would be so much more intimidating. So what was really great about it too is that we were able to involve the other host in the you know, quote unquote drawing of it. So I dragged my foot along the sand on one end and I asked him to go to the other side and mirror my movements. So then at the end of that sequence, we have this big drawing of a kraken, life-size. And, you know, little did I know that they would take that and run with the idea. So then, you know, the next episode, we were creating a giant shark, which was 60 foot. So we did, like, a 60-foot sand sculpture in Florida. So this thing was huge. It took us all day to make, you know, and it was cool because it gave me a reason to go on a helicopter. So we went on a helicopter so we can look at it from up top, and we had the other host lay down by its mouth to make it look like he's being eaten or something, right? So it was really cool. And then, you know, the art projects just kept getting bigger, so it went from that to this big 40-foot graffiti mural of a killer bird on a wall, and I've never used graffiti in my entire life.
Interesting.
So I had to learn 30 minutes before we started shooting, you know. And what was even crazier was that up until that point, because we're still designing this creature, we had met a scientist that kind of changed how our creature would look. So I couldn't even plan out what I was going to be drawing. So the sequence that we shot just an hour before we started spray painting on the wall was what determined what we were going to draw. And I was like, holy crap, I don't think these guys know that this stuff needs preparation, you know? Because they give the scientists notes and stuff, so they sound smart. So I'm like, can't you guys give me more time? But such is the way of television. It's fast. It's on the go. We need it now. So, you know, we designed the creature in a few minutes, and then I took a spray can and played around on the side for about 10 minutes, and then off we went, you know?
Wow.
So we spray painted this. But luckily I had an expert with me to show me how to do it, and then he would come in and help clean up the edges and stuff like that. So it's not like it was all me or anything.
Understood.
But getting the proportions of it was absolutely hellish because it's so huge, right? But
sure.
What's really great about the show is that you can kind of, similar to how when I start inking my own work, it looks different from when I pencil because you have to adjust to the medium. So when we were portraying this killer bird, which happens to be a Navajo story, we decided, I'm like, well, you know, guys, I think it would be really neat if we did this in a native art style, which is a lot of negative space with black, reds, and white, you know? And it certainly was going to be a lot easier than trying to draw a realistic, you know, spray paint painting on a wall, right?
Sure.
So we ended up doing it in that Native American art style. So it turned out great, you know? So, you know, I think it's really cool that the quick thinking that you learn as a comic book artist to be able to just go with the flow, we were able to apply to making these large-scale art projects for this TV show.
Incredible,
you know?
Man.
And so it's insane, you know? And I've drawn in some of the weirdest places in the world, so I think it's definitely a great experience, and we even got to do sequences where I actually drew a comic book. I remember this one scene, we were in a cave in Germany, we were looking at lion bones in this cave that was known, has been around since the Ice Age, that had all these like bears and lion bones, stuff like that. So, you know, well, typically they just want me to draw something, but it's up to me to figure out how to do it. So that particular scene, I ended up drawing a sequence. So I drew like a 3-page sequence of a bear getting attacked by a lion, and we did it in like 20 minutes.
Wow.
So it was cool because I realized, you know, I'm applying what I learned from my profession, but during those circumstances, which isn't the most convenient places to draw, I learned from that and took it back home, you know? So
sure.
In San Diego, when I had no chair, I was perfectly fine drawing the whole time standing up, you know? So
yeah, I'm sure that's...
From the wild caves to the wilderness of the San Diego town. You know?
Were you able to take pages, or did you need to take pages of DC work with you on the road like this?
Oh, dude, absolutely. It's so funny. If you watch the first episode closely and zoom in somehow, I think one of my art pads clipped onto it was a script for The Flash.
Hilarious.
So if you see me walking around with an art pad, dude, I think there was a scene where you could actually see the script. So my schedule for it was pretty stressful.
I can imagine.
To say the least. I mean, basically, you know, we'd get up at 5 in the morning, you know, meet the crew downstairs at about 7, and then we would start filming and until about dinner time. And then, you know, so you go have dinner, and then I usually just went straight back to my hotel room and worked until about 3 in the morning.
Wow.
And worked on my pages, and then started the whole thing again the next day. But because of the physical nature of the show, by the time I got back to my room, I would just be exhausted.
Sure.
Right? So I actually shifted my hours. I went like all Batman style, which is I went to bed right after dinner and set my alarm clock up for around 1 a.m. to 2:30 a.m. Waking up at 2:30 a.m. was a sleeping in for me. So
wow.
I would work on my pages before I would go film. So that was my schedule for almost 8 months.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. So 8 months. It took 8 months to film the 6 episodes you guys did.
Yeah, we started back in November. So and we just wrapped up about a month and a half ago.
Or wow.
So it was quite a long process. I mean, you know, mind you, it sounds like I did that every day. We do get days off, and there
sure.
are certain days where, you know, filming ends around like 4 or 5. And,
okay.
I mean, there are times though where we literally filmed from, you know, 7 a.m. in the morning till 4 a.m. the next day.
Wow.
You know, so but that's just the nature of it because there's certain things that. That it's, you know, unlike a real movie, not every element of this can be planned and redone to death, you know.
Understood.
So, I mean, like that particular day, we went out to the ocean to basically try to capture a squid, and they only come out at night, you know. So we were there until 4 in the morning, and I'm sitting there just getting sick to my stomach. That was the one day that literally broke the camel's back on the production. Because the next day, the other host was getting sick because he gets like some serious migraines. I was like throwing up on the side of the boat.
Oh my God!
You know, people were crying. People were getting fired. It was, it was insane, dude. I was just like, holy crap, you know. But after that day, they literally pushed us beyond our limit. And then after that day, they're like, I don't think we can kill our crew on the road as much, you know, because it's different from the guys planning out the schedule at home base to
sure.
what we have to go do on the field, right?
Understood.
Yeah, because they started travel days, which they consider a day off for us. It's actually more strenuous than days that we have to shoot, you know, because we have to pack all our gear, chase after a plane, you know, and it's, you're not really resting.
Understood.
You know? And with the nature of the show, traveling from one location to the other, you know, you never really got comfortable in one place too long, so you were constantly unpacking everything and repacking everything up. So, you know, so along the way, I basically would have to set up, like, a mobile studio. So I would just work in my hotel room. So I think I broke, like, a couple scanners along the way. You know, so it was... So now I have, like, some equipment that's, like, I actually have to have a converter to use at home because I bought it here or over there.
Interesting.
You know, so it was definitely a fun experience, and it was one of those things where, you know, maybe it was the enthusiasm I had for both projects that kept me going because, you know, in hindsight, thinking about it now, I don't know if I could do it again, you know, because it was such... a physically taxing period in terms of working in comics and working on the show, maintaining a life.
Well, yeah. I understand. Well, yeah, I totally can appreciate. Yeah, you got a girlfriend and everything. I mean, come on, man. What the hell? I mean, that's...
Exactly. So it was very testing.
Understood.
To relationships, to sanity, to...
Wow.
To physical health.
Well,
yeah.
What are the prospects? I mean, what are the prospects of another season? Because I don't know how the show is being received right now in Canada, and it's going to be on the Sci-Fi Channel starting in September. But it sounds like it's going to, I don't know. I mean, it sounds like it has the ingredients to be a very interesting show. Like you said, like Deadliest Warrior and stuff. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it was definitely built for multiple seasons, you know.
And sure.
I think the contract says something about it. But ultimately, it's up to the networks and how well it's received, right?
Gotcha.
And right now, I haven't heard word for how the ratings are here in Canada. I'm assuming it's okay, you know?
How about on the street feedback? How about on the street feedback, being in Toronto and stuff? Have you been noticed, and are you...
Yeah. Do you know what's funny? funny is that right after the first episode aired, I went out of town to go to San Diego.
Okay.
So I've only been back for about a week. So I honestly don't know. But I have been getting a few people on Facebook from, you know, maybe like old high school friends that are just like, what the hell are you doing on TV? I'm flipped because it's on 5 times a week, right?
Wow.
They rerun it in, at different time slots.
Certainly.
And, so, you know, like I would get these people emailing me like, dude, I'm just flipping through the channel. What the hell? When did you do this? I'm like, obviously you weren't following my Twitter. Yeah. So it's been a lot more from people that I know, you know. I mean,
okay.
I don't know what it's like on the streets. I can't tell, you know.
Understood. Well, and it's the first season, so people are going to discover it, and sometimes, you know, like you say, it might take multiple airings before people really start catching on.
Exactly. So I don't know. You know, it's not really a big deal for me, I guess. You know, it was just a fun experience, and hopefully we get to do it again, and hopefully it won't be under such hard circumstance, but I have a feeling it probably will be if there is a second season, you know, and it may just probably kill me, but we'll see how it goes. I mean, you know, if the things that we do on camera doesn't kill me, the hours probably will. Yeah, but mind you, I checked off a lot of stuff on my bucket list. Even I had to even add things into it that I never even thought I would do.
Yeah, I don't think giant squid's on many people's bucket list, but all right, that's fine.
Dude, it's insane, man. You know, I got to swim with sharks without a cage.
Wow.
I went paragliding just so that I could know what it feels like for how a bird flies.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and you know what I mean? Like, and I owe it all because I could draw. How weird is that? Right?
This is all stuff that you're going to apply, obviously, in your art as well. I mean, you really know the experience of flying now. You know the experience
absolutely.
That's fantastic, man. Well, you're ready for Aquaman now, too, because you're swimming with sharks. That's fantastic.
No kidding. That should be our next project.
Wouldn't surprise me. Know? I know what Jeff Johns likes out there. I wouldn't be surprised. That wouldn't, you know.
Yeah, well, it's crazy because now it's funny because near the tail end of the show, I couldn't help but think logically. So they're like, oh, think fantasy again, you know, because they like the conflict between science and fantasy, right? You know, but then I'm like, but that doesn't make sense. I wouldn't do that, you know? And then at the beginning of the show, it's the same thing with the scientists. They wouldn't even entertain what I would say. And then now they're like, oh, man, you're right. It is cooler if you suggest something and we try to find something in the real world to apply to our animal. Because if you could find something that's real, that came from a fantastic kind of suggestion, it's how trippy is that?
Absolutely.
Right? So like when we were making a dragon, we have to make the same breathe fire. So we actually found scientific ways for how something could breathe fire, you know? So it became fun, you know, for both the scientist and me, because then there was a perfect balance, you know, which is the thing about the show is that it was a constant learning experience, because the first few episodes, there was a real struggle between the identity of the show and the identity of the process of how we were going to make these things. And then I think in the last couple episodes, we finally found a good balance between the science and the fantasy and how to approach it. Yeah. So, you know, if there's a second season, we know better of how to do it. And I think it would make for some more fantastic images and some cooler scientific discoveries, you know?
I understand. I think if there is a second season, I have a feeling you're going to be very busy in Hall H next year at San Diego. There as much for your television work as you are for your comic book work, and that's going to be fun, man. And I, you know, I mean, I can tell you right now, you're another one of those artists, so we don't want to lose you to TV and movies, man. We want you to stick around and crank out stuff. But by the same token, what a wonderful experience and very cool, man. And again, this only has to help inspire your art, so I think that's great.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, as long as no one stabs me in the eye in Hall H, I think it'll be all right.
Hopefully
but,
not.
But you know. Ultimately, I realize even being out on the road and hanging out with the director and the producers and the cameraman. And, you know, it's the process is not all that different from creating comic books, you know. And, in fact, one of my highlights was when the director asked me for shot suggestions, and one of the sequences that they used for a time lapse was a shot that I had picked out and scouted for, and then they were like, whereas prior, the DP was kind of like, oh, well, what if I move over here? And then the director was like, oh, I liked it the way better how Francis had it. So I was like, yes, you know? And then you realize that the things that you learn as a comic book artist is completely applicable in so many ways. And I think that's what, for me, what I learned from the show is that rather than, you know, comic books being this sort of stepchild where you're ashamed to say you're drawing it, it's actually something cool to do, because the stuff that you learn as a comic book artist makes you such a versatile storyteller, you know?
Sure.
And that's the thing that I think some artists forget, which is that if you do comic books well and know how to tell a story, you can apply it to any job, you know? I mean, feasibly, if I just understood how to use the equipment, you know, you could go direct the show.
Oh, sure.
You could write the show. You could maybe be the camera guy on the show. You know, there's just so many things you could do from becoming an animator or a storyboarder. So the stuff that people forget about comic book artists is that, you know, comic book artists are probably one of the most well-rounded artists that you could find, because we're forced to draw real-life situations, things that we don't like, because we're telling a story, you know? So it's ultimately, that's what I learned from it, which is kind of ironic, because through this show, it made me realize how much drawing comic books have taught me, and how much it's given back to me in terms of what I've experienced throughout my life. So it's one of those things where I don't think I'll ever leave comic books. You know, it's definitely not in the cards, you know. I mean,
good.
The only time that I see that happening is, you know, knock on wood, you know, something physically bad happens. But it's just too much fun, you know. I mean, that was one of the things that I found about the show, is that when we're doing certain things, we're limited to budget and budget, you know. Whereas when I'm drawing comic books, I'm limited to my imagination, and the only limitations of budget is time.
You know, understood.
You're just limited in the time that you have. So in that sense, I totally understand now why some of these TV writers are turning to comic books and doing more, because the freedom that you have in a comic book, regardless of whether you're working for a corporate publisher or independently, the freedom that you have as an artist, it's huge. Yeah.
I do understand. And, you know, it's funny, today driving in, I was listening to an old Orson Welles interview that he did with another director, Peter Bogdanovich, and they were talking about cartoonists and their influence on film. And even specific filmmakers who started as cartoonists, a guy named Frank Tashlin, who did a great Martin and Lewis comedy called Artists and Models that has a lot of comic book references in the story itself from the 50s. But he, Wells, really went as far as to say that, yes, composition of a comic panel is very, very similar to directing and you know, the setups that filmmakers do to really create whatever shot they want to do for a movie. And Wells was right there saying, oh, no. And it, you know, was listing all of these great cartoonists like Al Capp, the Little Abner creator, and Milton Caniff, and how much he loved Terry and the Pirates, and you know, and just the admiration and respect he had for these cartoonists. And he said, no, he said they influenced the filmmakers, or they were influenced by the filmmakers that they saw early on, and in turn influenced generations of filmmakers since. So it doesn't surprise me that you're finding the same kind of experience seeing both sides of this now.
Absolutely, because I mean the biggest I guess thing that you could take from comic books, even though people think it's the properties and the license of the characters, it's more than that. It's the way we tell the stories.
You
That's
bet.
What makes it appealing.
You bet. Very
I mean,
cool.
They've done comic book movies before, and they applied their Hollywood version, and it failed. failed. But as you can see, if they just did what we did, it turns out pretty damn good.
I'm with you. Absolutely.
And I think that's one of the things that's really interesting about it, because, I mean, even talking to the cameraman, you know, when we're talking about shots and how we think and the things that I would suggest, we have different terminologies, but it's the same thing. And what's really cool is that, like, you know, we would discuss about how where I could place the camera if I was doing this shot, you know. But obviously, we're limited to what we have. And then, you know, it's just interesting for them to go, oh, wow, that's really interesting and cool. And I was like, yeah, I took that from, like, Will Eisner. You know? And it's stuff that we've been doing for a long time, and it's part of the comic book language. But to film, to them, it's a revelation. They're like, oh, man, that's so brilliant. I'm like, yeah, I thought of it, you know. And it's been around for so long. It's so weird. And now, seeing as how married comic books and movies are and how tied in they are together, it's completely beneficial to both. And I can't see how it was so separated before, you know.
Absolutely. Well, you know, thankfully, I think tastes are expanding. And I think people luckily are more open to where the ideas are coming from than maybe generations before. And, you know, they're able to tap guys like you that are talented guys and you know, obviously get something that was always around, but they needed the right person to kind of translate it for a modern audience. So I think that's great, man. Very cool.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think a lot of it is just timing, and sometimes it just takes a bit of time for people to realize that that the comic book world has more to offer than shiny colors and tight pants. Yeah.
Absolutely, man. Well, that's what makes this, I think, era as exciting. And I think that's why the fans are as excited as the creators are in terms of the acceptance and where, you know, the convergence is going. And I think the good news is it only makes for good storytelling, as you say, and good entertainment. And I think, you know, certainly we're going to – hopefully Beast Legends will be around to contribute more than the one season. And it sounds great. And I really feel like I'm kind of shooting in the dark with some of my questions. So maybe mid-series or something like that, we should plan on another Word Balloon so we can talk a little bit more with, you know, the ability to have seen a few episodes and everything. Because although – who knows, man? You're going to be too busy. You're going to big time me now.
Who said I already am not?
Yeah, I'm teasing you.
I'm just kidding.
Nah, well, exactly.
I mean,
no, that's good.
Absolutely. It would be fun to do a catch-up, so then that way you could, you know, actually see the episodes
right.
And gather your own opinion and see how it all works out. Because, you know, up to this point, it's really hard to describe how the show was. And, you know, even now, like, watching it and seeing what got edited, for me, it's very interesting. It's like, you know, you feel kind of like, oh, man, I can't believe they cut that out. That shit was hilarious. But, you know, SCCs and all that stuff. But it's entertaining, and I think what's interesting about it is that even if you're not a comic book fan or just a sci-fi fan or an animation fan or a documentary fan, it literally feels like there's a lot in it that would be fairly entertaining for anybody.
Very,
you know?
Cool.
And what's really cool is one of my aunts said that their daughters were watching it, and they're like, oh yeah, it's really informative. That's really cool, you know. And whereas one of my buddies who was watching it, he's just like, you know, you should start working out or something, you know.
He's just worried about how you look on camera. That's hilarious.
Yeah. So it was kind of hilarious. So, yeah, and then there's some people that are like, man, you know, the animation on the show is freaking fantastic. It steals the show, you know, and it's pretty broad in that respect. You know, you just have to suspend your disbelief a little bit, but at the same time, the stuff that we do is scientific enough that it holds water, you know. We're
very
not,
cool.
It's not just all made up, which is really the interesting part. It's almost like if we decided, you know, if there's a guy that really runs fast in the real world, how can we make that happen? And we go off and do it.
That's great, man. Very cool.
Sure.
No, well, I'm looking forward to it. Now, it starts in September on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Yeah, I mean, I really wished I was able to send you a disc or something, but they're pretty tight about
no worries, I guess,
regional stuff. And I know that even when I was in the U.S. during the cons, I tried to go online because on history.ca, if you're in Canada, you can actually
stream it.
Watch all the episodes, absolutely, like the next day. And, you know, when I'm in the U.S., I was like, oh, crap, I can't watch it.
Sure.
And it's kind of funny because it's almost like a Canada's revenge because, you know, every time I get, like, every time I get links from some of my friends over at Aspen Comics, you know, sometimes we exchange emails of funny little clips that we see, and then they'll send me something, and it'll say, you cannot watch it, you know, like, only regionals for the U.S. And blah, blah, blah. And I would be like, no, you know. I remember getting so excited when I saw that NBA.com now had this league pass where you could watch all the games. You just pay like a one-year annual thing, and you can watch any game you want online. I was like, oh, sign me up. And then I find out only available in North America. And I'm sorry, only available in the
U.S.
I'm like, no.
Yeah, U.S. only. Ugh.
And
well,
I was like, we have a basketball team.
Yeah, really? That sucks. Yeah, that is shitty that the Raptor fans can't do that. That makes no sense.
It was really weird because I get these guys from, like, you know, the Ukraine watching this thing because the regional code allows them to do it.
Oh,
but
wow.
Not in Canada. You know, because I guess there's all sorts of broadcasting rules. Like,
oh, I know.
Like, you know, it's a different distribution. I'm sure you know with being in radio and stuff.
Well, but also yeah. Just being a fan of so much British and Canadian television that, you know, the U.S. markets haven't really gotten around to taking. You know, I tell the Immermans in particular how much I love Ken Finkelman, this amazing Canadian comic. I don't know how aware you are. It's a show called The Newsroom. I love that show. Guy's a genius. The guy is such
it's
a genius.
Really funny. Seeing humor from different countries because it's so different, right? I mean, especially like British humor is quite different. And I'm starting to like that Summer Heights or something, which is like this comedy from New Zealand. And there's this guy who just plays like all the characters. You know, he plays like a girl who's like the hottest chick in school.
Isn't that like a boarding school thing? I think I have seen.
Yeah.
HBO has run that guy's show. I've seen that.
Oh, man, that show is hilarious.
No, it is. It's interesting to see comedy from other countries. Absolutely, man. And sci-fi from other countries. God, that South African sci-fi show, and I know they played it in Canada, Charlie Jade.
Oh, I don't think I've heard of that.
Oh, my God. It was amazing. It's this parallel universe show that was only one season. And it was incredible, and it was mostly shot in South Africa. And because of that, it had such an exotic look to it anyway, even when they were in city scenes and stuff. It was just definitely different, and it's amazing. And, yeah, thank God for the internet and cable and satellite and everything. I think we're finally really getting to experience the world in ways we never can, and certainly your series is going to be a big part of that too.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, that's the hope, right?
You bet.
Right now, again, you know, it's airing on History Television in Canada, and then it'll be airing on Sci-Fi in the U.S. And then I believe the BBC has picked up the rights for worldwide distribution.
So, wonderful.
You know, we'll see how it goes. And as for the second season, I don't know yet. I mean, it could very well do very well in the U.S. and then maybe not so well here, but that could be enough to get it picked up for
sure.
A season. You know, and I'm not really aware of how all that stuff works, and I try not to concern myself with it because the way I see it, if there's a second season, great, I get to go on another adventure. If it doesn't, I get to sleep more than 4 hours a day. But that's not a bad thing either.
I understand. Well, dude, I'm gonna wrap up here because I really appreciate this hour. And you're right, it is going to be a two-parter now. But that's good because we'll have an hour about the comics and we've got a nice hour here about Beast Legends, which, as we said, starts in September on the Sci-Fi Channel. It's already running on, and forgive me, what is it called again in Canada, the channel?
It's on History Television Canada. It airs 10 p.m. on Wednesdays and 8 p.m. on Thursdays. And some other odd hours.
Cool.
And it'll start airing on Sci-Fi September 9th. I believe that's a Thursday, 10 p.m., and it'll be running weekly after that.
Fantastic, man. And so we look forward to those six episodes and possibly more. And more importantly, more monthly goodness coming your way for The Flash with you and Jeff. But continued success, Francis. Seriously, man. It's a pleasure talking to you finally, and it's a pleasure reading you every month, and I look forward to more.
Yeah, thanks a lot, man. Again, I'm not going anywhere. Jeff and I have already plotted out what we're going to do for the next two story arcs of The Flash.
Outstanding.
It's going to be friggin' awesome. And, hey, thanks for having me on the show. Like I said, I'm a big fan. You know? So I feel like I finally made it.
You know? Aim higher. But I appreciate that. You're a good man for saying so. But no, and we should mention too, you're going to be at the end of this month. You're going to be at the Toronto Con. Now, what? And give me the full name of the con, because tis will kill me
I'll
if I don't say it.
I will be at the Toronto Fan Expo.
There we go.
The end of the month. I will also be in Seattle in September and New York in October.
Well, then I'll definitely see you in New York in October. So that's great.
Oh, that should be cool. That,
absolutely.
That should be a lot of fun.
It'll be my pleasure, man.
That's Francis Manipal. Don't forget, his show Beast Legends debuts on the Sci-Fi Channel September 9th. It'll be on right after Destination Truth on Thursday nights, and it sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. And make sure you check out Francis every month in the pages of Flash. Thanks again for listening. John Sutris reminding you that Word Balloon is all over the internet. Of course, you can find us at wordballoon.com with our archive of well over 300 interviews with your favorite comic creators, people from animation, film, television, you name it, all waiting for you at wordballoon.com. Our show is posted at iTunes as well. Make sure you subscribe to the Word Balloon feed. That way you won't miss an episode. Check out the Aw Yeah podcast with Art and Franco, a new addition to the Word Balloon network. Their feed is available as well at awyeah.libsyn.com. If you have any questions or comments about my show, you can reach me via email, john@wordballoon.com. Follow me on Twitter under John Word Balloon or under Facebook under my name, John Sutris. Until next time, thanks as always for listening. We can't do it without you. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2010.